Bitcoin has grown to this level. The companies have added, it's infiltrated the government as well. Senators are speaking pro-Bitcoin. This is all happening right now. So Bitcoin has grown so big. The genie is out of the bottle. This is the Bitcoin Infinity Podcast,
a show where we take you through the Bitcoin rabbit hole and beyond.
Hope you enjoy the episode. Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Infinity Podcast. My name is Ram.
And I'm Krishna.
And in this episode, we want to discuss the elephant in the room. Can government stop Bitcoin? Like, many people cannot fathom the fact that US government is sitting quiet and watching Bitcoin grow. Like, US went to war to protect its petrodollar. Like, why is it not stopping Bitcoin yet?
So, even to continue on this, a lot of people are stuck. You know, they go into the rabbit hole, they like the idea of Bitcoin, they think Bitcoin is a wonderful technology, and then they get stuck at the point where, okay, Bitcoin is great, but it looks like an obvious threat to the governments, right? It looks like a threat to the US dollar, so I'm pretty sure the government is going to step in at some point and regulate or even ban Bitcoin. So it's great, but let me just stick to my US dollar or some other asset. So this is what most of the people think, and that's where they get stuck while going through the Bitcoin rabbit hole. It even happened to Ray Dalio, and that's one of the reasons why he was kind of skeptical initially in order to get into Bitcoin. So we thought it's important to address this.
Yeah, and Bitcoin definitely has this anti-central bank characteristic to it, like, it strikes at the root of the government. So it's nothing wrong in thinking that the government will eventually ban it, because government historically, anything that has threatened the government money, like, I think there was e-gold which came up and government was quick enough to shut it down before it reached 10 billion market cap. So yeah, like, how can government attack Bitcoin? Or if you're a nation state, what is the attack vector to neutralize Bitcoin? We see mainly two ways to tackle Bitcoin. One is an outright ban, saying, hey, no more usage of Bitcoin. Everyone stop doing whatever Bitcoin activity you're doing. And that is one way.
And the second way is, if we attack the economic incentives behind using Bitcoin, let's say, okay, no more mining. Hey, you cannot transact using Bitcoin.
No more running nodes.
And if we add these things, then you basically eliminate all the reason why you want to use Bitcoin. Like, there's no profitability for the miners. Bitcoin will eventually suffer its natural death.
So yeah, let's dive into it one by one. Let's tackle the outright ban stuff. So like I said, if government one day comes to say, hey, stop running Bitcoin, what does it mean? Like, Bitcoin at the crux, it's just a software. It's an open decentralized protocol, so it's just a bunch of miners and nodes running this software. So how do you enforce all these miners and nodes from running this, to stop running this software? So that's not possible. It's just like asking people to stop using any random software, or asking people to stop using internet. So
that's exactly right. I mean, just think about it, right? There are so many nodes, they're running the softwares, like Ram explained, and even if there is just one node that's surviving, like, let's say the government hunts each and every node down, each and every person down, closes it, and but one person somehow survives at one corner of the globe running the node, that means Bitcoin still survives. So it's practically just doesn't make any sense to stop it. So you can go and attack a centralized company like Facebook. You can point a gun at Mark Zuckerberg and say, hey, just shut Facebook down, or else I'll just shoot you. So he doesn't have a choice. He's going to shut Facebook down. So you can point a gun at a person, but there is no way you can point gun at an idea. Bitcoin is just an idea. It's just text. It's just code.
Yeah, it's just free speech, which brings me to this. Somewhere in the 90s, there was this PGP case. PGP is basically pretty good privacy. It's basically a cryptographic program, and US government, they said this is illegal. And what the attorneys of PGP did was, since it's just open source code, they said they printed out the entire code and they said, hey, this is what PGP is. You cannot classify these as munitions. And open source code is just text, and it's protected under freedom of speech, which is the First Amendment in the US. So code is just free speech, and Bitcoin is open source code, and Bitcoin is protected under First Amendment. So banning Bitcoin as a software really doesn't make sense.
Okay, that's great. Bitcoin as a software cannot be banned. then how about hacking it? Like, can we just hack the blockchain? Because that's a fair question to ask, right?
Yeah, that is a fair question. So what does it mean to hack Bitcoin? So basically, you want to corrupt the ledger, you want to add fraudulent transactions or make the entire blockchain unusable. In order to do that, let's say the government want to add an invalid block. They'll have to become a miner. They'll have to spend a lot of energy to mine the block and broadcast the transaction. And the nodes will have to verify it. But like, nodes inherently are very cheap. They have very low costs to verifying fraud. The game theory of Bitcoin is like, nodes want Bitcoin to survive. So they are going to approve only valid blocks as opposed to invalid blocks. So naturally, if you're a bad actor, if you're a bad miner, the odds are stacked against you, because the economic incentive to actually mine an invalid block is actually very low. And that is the beauty of Bitcoin's design. So it's fundamental asymmetry between cost of committing a new block of transaction versus the cost of verifying the validity of those transactions.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of Bitcoin is it's a very simple code. There is so much energy is spent on securing the network. And it's imagine this like a school, like just a small school, but that's just surrounded by the entire US military for its security. So that's exactly Bitcoin. So to put it in simple terms, that's the amount of security that Bitcoin has. And it's practically not hackable.
All right, fair enough. You say it's not hackable. Another question that comes up is, can I bring down Bitcoin by shutting down the infrastructure layer, that is like the internet?
That's a fair question to ask, right? So Bitcoin is just software. A lot of nodes need to be connected. So internet is just one of the ways where all the nodes can be connected. If not for the internet, maybe there can be another way. So in El Salvador right now, people don't need internet in order to transact Bitcoin between each other. They do it over their cell phone carriers. So all it needs is just a medium.
Yeah, I think Blockstream has a satellite where, like, even in case of a scenario where the entire globe has an internet shutdown, like, I can literally do Bitcoin transaction, because if I have like a way to communicate with the satellite, I can actually broadcast Bitcoin transaction through satellite. So it need not be satellite, it can be radio waves, it can be Bluetooth. You just need a medium to send packets of data and broadcast your transaction. So
I mean, this can happen through mesh networks or, you know, new technologies as well. But more importantly, in such a scenario where, you know, there's no internet, which seems inconceivable at this point, and the only reason such a thing could happen was like an apocalyptic end of the world scenario.
Yeah, but in such a scenario, I think we have like bigger problems. People will be fighting for food and water and weapons.
And Bitcoin would be at the least of their worries.
Exactly. So we don't see this as a threat, but we're just laying it out there. Okay, despite all this, let's say a country comes out and says, hey, we are banning Bitcoin, no more Bitcoin trades, no more exchanging stuff in Bitcoin. So what happens next?
So most people think that as soon as a country says we are banning something, that particular product ceases to exist. But that's just not how things work. Let's say when you ban something, let's say you ban Bitcoin for that matter, government comes out and says, hey, you just cannot buy Bitcoin. If you use Bitcoin, if you use your dollars or your currency to purchase Bitcoin from the exchange, we will just not allow it. Like, you just cannot use it from the bank. So then people are going to be like, okay, so which means the government has control over my money, at least if not all of them. Some people are going to ask, right? Government has control over my money. I totally actually can't even buy whatever I want. So they're going to be like, okay, I still want this stuff. So because there is an incentive of demand, there is going to be a reason for supply. So there's an incentive economically.
So
for
naturally, some market will...
A natural market is formed. People are going to find a way to supply Bitcoin for the demand that exists. So,
and essentially, this is basically what a black market is, right?
Exactly. That's just black market. And even if you take the case of marijuana in the US, so this exactly happened. Like, US tried to literally prison so many people. It had a lot of drug operations, like to find cartels, etc. It tried its very best in order to ban marijuana. But what ended up happening, it just grew the adoption of marijuana. There's like more and more demand for it. The government could do nothing about it. And they realized that, okay, we are fighting this thing and adoption is increasing. And we are also not getting anything out of it. You're not getting even sales tax out of it. So they realized, okay, at least some part of the countries realized, like California, Colorado, New York, they realized that, okay, it's better to just make it legal and at least get sales tax out of it.
Yeah. So this happened for drugs like marijuana. But imagine the case for like Bitcoin. Like there's now a supply chain. It's you can transport it from one part of the world to other.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually a great point what Ram made right now. I mean, for drugs, there is less incentive. I mean, it's just for recreation and stuff like that. But Bitcoin is much more than that. I mean, you're storing your value. So people have a lot more economic incentive to find a way to supply it. So it's much better than drugs in that aspect. So for sure, if you ban it, the adoption is going to increase. And
the equation sort of changes if you bring in another country. So this is a classic game theory example. It's called the prisoner's dilemma. Let me explain what a prisoner's dilemma is. So basically, there are two prisoners who are arrested and they are in like solitary confinement and they have like no means of communicating with each other. The prosecutors, they give sort of a bargain like, each prisoner is given an opportunity to either betray the other by testifying the other committed the crime, or they can remain silent. So this brings four possible outcomes, right? Like, let's say me and Krishna are the prisoners. Me as a prisoner, I can betray Krishna in the sense I will be set free and Krishna will get 3 years of imprisonment. If Krishna betrays me and I stay silent, Krishna is set free and I will get 3 years of imprisonment. If both of us betray each other, we both will get 2 years of imprisonment. And if both of us stay silent, we will both get 1 year of imprisonment. So it's a very classic game theory problem. And the best outcome, you might think like, okay, there's some probability. Okay, Krishna might not betray me. He's my very close friend. So why not I betray him and I will be set free and he will get 3 years. But Krishna can think the same thing. So the best outcome for both of us is to stay silent, which is we get 1 year each. That is the best outcome that can get. This is a classic game theory problem. And let's bring the countries back. There's country A and country B. There's again two options for each country: ban Bitcoin. The other one is accept Bitcoin. So country A, country B, they both ban Bitcoin. Like Krishna said, banning is not effective. Somehow Bitcoin adoption grows and it's the Streisand effect, right? Like the more you ban, the more adoption it has, because it has utility. Bitcoin will continue to gain adoption. Fiat currency will continue to debase itself. Yeah, there is a reason Bitcoin came into existence. So Bitcoin will continue its adoption. So both countries banning Bitcoin, Bitcoin still wins. Let's say country A bans Bitcoin. What country B can see is, hey, there is a market for Bitcoin because country A has banned it. Let me start accepting Bitcoin and I will get more trade in Bitcoin and I can get more out of my economy. So country B starts accepting Bitcoin. So in the end, Bitcoin wins. Other way around is also the same. Country A might start accepting Bitcoin because other country B might ban Bitcoin. So it's the same. And the fourth outcome is both countries are actually accepting Bitcoin. Like countries would have seen, hey, if I ban Bitcoin, the other country is benefiting more out of it. So I might as well accept Bitcoin. So the other country will also do the same. So at the end of the day, both countries will end up accepting Bitcoin. And at the end of the day, Bitcoin wins.
I think this is what we see. We see it happening. India had banned Bitcoin earlier. Even Ukraine had banned. A lot of countries have had initially banned Bitcoin. They thought, okay, we can just get rid of this thing. But what they didn't realize was there were other countries which continued adopting it. Like US was okay with it, even though there were like some problems. They never banned it as such. And then, of course, in Europe, a lot of countries were still okay with people transacting, miners and exchanges, etc. And India and the other countries, they realized that, we are missing out on something. They just thought, okay, we need to make sure that the adoption happens in our country as well. So India again said, okay, we are not banning Bitcoin. So
And we are seeing the other side of the outcome also come into play, right? Like El Salvador recently made Bitcoin a legal tender, and other countries will soon start to see El Salvador making a lot of economic progress. They're saving on remittances, and obviously Bitcoin as a hard money, El Salvador may be stronger economically. And slowly other Latin American countries are starting to sort of consider.
Yeah, I think it's already they're passing a bill in Panama, and even Cuba is adopting it, right?
So maybe even Paraguay, but yeah. So, but we are slowly starting to see that happen. So yeah, we are seeing the game theory of Bitcoin come into play.
Yeah, and the other thing that countries can maybe decide is, let's say all the G20 countries come together and then they say, okay, let's all of us collude and say no Bitcoin in all the 20 countries. We are going to ban Bitcoin. So this is another possible scenario.
But it's, I think it's highly improbable. Like we said, the game theory part won't like let other countries collude, but even if they collude, like what is the consensus they'll reach? Like what is the consensus for COVID? What is the consensus for lockdown?
Like, I mean, that's true, right? I mean, like they couldn't reach a consensus for something as important as COVID, where people were like dying every minute. So there's no way I think they're going to come together for something like Bitcoin, which countries maybe currently don't seem as a threat.
Threat, yeah. Maybe countries can't collude on banning, but like we spoke about hacking Bitcoin, and the cost of hacking Bitcoin, which is like cost of adding an invalid transaction, is a lot. Can countries collude and mine together an invalid transaction? It's popularly known as a 51% attack, which is like basically one miner or set of miners getting more than 51% of the hash rate in a mining.
The country also, all the countries together, they need to have a lot of mining hardware. They need to manufacture these hardware, right? It's a very expensive process. And just to carry this out, it requires close to $5 billion of investment into these hardwares. And imagine, overwhelming their entire semiconductor capacity to just do this. You're basically doing nothing else. All the semiconductor fabs are just, you know, manufacturing these miners for the whole purpose of carrying out a Bitcoin, 51% attack, and which is also going to eventually put their national security at stake. And let's say even they manage to do all this, they're doing it on a very speculative basis, and that process is also very, very expensive.
Yeah, basically all these countries come together and put something that has a market cap of, right now it stands at around 1 trillion or 800 billion. Like, would they come and do that? And even if they do such an attack, like, keep in mind, they have to sustain the attack forever. Like, the cost of 51% attack on Bitcoin is around 1.6 million per hour. So imagine you want to sustain the attack per year, it's going to take 14 billion. Apart from that, whatever Krishna said, like, you're going to overwhelm. We don't have that much semiconductors to actually create those mining hardware. So there's so many constraints on top of this. Like right now, currently in 2021, the entire world is going through a supply chain shortage in semiconductor industry. Like even like PlayStation 5 and Xbox releases are delayed. We are seeing car manufacturers delaying their releases. I heard even the situation is as crazy as like car manufacturers are giving only one key. They are not even giving a duplicate key. So that's how bad the semiconductor chip shortage is.
There is not like, this is not going to get solved maybe in the next 2-3 months. It's not like a very short term thing. It's going to take several years to get back to even normalcy. So these are restrictions or, constraints on top of all the things that we explained.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. So these constraints and Bitcoin's secure proof of work model sort of prevents such an attack through collusion.
So far, we discussed the different attack vectors to ban or neutralize Bitcoin. We can now shift focus and start discussing a little bit about different ways by which the governments can work towards reducing the economic incentive to use Bitcoin. So that's more into regulation of Bitcoin.
Yeah, one thing which the government can do is they can take their pound of flesh on our gains, like basically taxing heavily. That is already happening. US already, every country almost has like capital gains tax. One thing that they can take this to the next level is enforce unrealized capital gains, which is like, let's say I haven't even sold my Bitcoin, but then my Bitcoin is gaining against dollar. Even if I've not sold it, I may have to report my gains and then have to pay tax on it. So that can be a little harsh on the existing hodlers, but yeah, that is one. Another one is...
they can... So this is the second thing that we want to discuss in this side is the governments can start surveilling the on-ramp and off-ramp, which is basically the exchanges from where you buy and sell your Bitcoin. So there's already KYC, which means know your customer, and there's AML, which is anti-money laundering. So basically, they already have all your information, so they can already surveillance you completely. The governments can start getting more regulation at this point. They can say that, let's just have 20 exchanges in the country. Like, whoever is going to withdraw their Bitcoin out of these exchanges, let's just call these Bitcoins as...
basically, tainting the Bitcoins.
Yeah. Like,
have like a allow list of addresses and...
So the only the Bitcoins that are inside the exchanges will be on the allow list. And whatever is outside, like, let's say you withdraw it to your wallet, those are going to be on the deny list.
Yeah, but then we think that... this is sort of impractical because like the cost of maintaining a deny list, which is like a growing list of addresses, is more than cost of creating wallets. Cost of creating wallets is practically zero. Like, I can create a wallet instantly, but the cost of maintaining like deny list is a growing list. Exchanges need to share with the chain analysis and surveillance companies the addresses that they're using. In turn, they will give the surveillance information. So it's not balanced. So we don't see this being practical. And we even saw this last year when the US Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, he proposed a law where addresses going out of the exchanges have to be monitored. And this was a seemingly impossible task. Entire crypto community, or rather Bitcoin community, came together and sort of fought off the idea as well.
Speaking of the US political system, we have Senator Cynthia Lummis from Wyoming. So she has started adding Bitcoin to the Bitcoin as a reserve asset to the state's treasury. There's also the SEC chairman, Gary Gensler. So he's also a pro-Bitcoiner. He once taught a class on Bitcoins and blockchain at MIT. And then there is also Mayor Soares. He's a mayor of Miami. So he wants to, you know, he wants the employees of the city to earn a percentage of their salary in Bitcoin, and also for the residents to start paying their taxes in Bitcoin. So all these are great news for pro-Bitcoin news, rather, coming out of the US political system.
And it's not just the political system, it's even the US public companies. It's a big deal because public companies literally need to report every part of their financial transaction to the public. So companies like Tesla, Square, MicroStrategy, they've been adding Bitcoin to their balance sheet. So the reason we are saying this is Bitcoin has grown to this level. Like, companies have added, it's infiltrated the government as well. Senators are speaking pro-Bitcoin. They're talking about four words at the infrastructure bill level. So this is all happening right now. So Bitcoin has grown so big. The genie is out of the bottle. It's going to be hard to do a very strict ban from here or even regulate it strictly from here.
Also think about the fact that, you know, US has been the, or US dollar has been the reserve currency for the rest of the world. And seeing so much of pro-Bitcoin news out of the US is going to make other countries also relax their Bitcoin regulations. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, they have nothing to lose. I mean, if US is moving towards Bitcoin, why shouldn't another country do it?
Exactly. So yeah, to conclude, you can't ban Bitcoin as a software. It's just free speech. It's protected under First Amendment. Bitcoin doesn't care if some government regulates it or not. It will just continue to mine the next block like clockwork. If one country makes it illegal, it'll thrive in some other country. And in order for Bitcoin to be regulated, we need the collaboration of every country in the world at the highest political level. So even if government regulates the exchanges, the on-ramps to the fiat system, and if the system becomes too difficult to use, it will naturally force a peer-to-peer market for Bitcoin.
Imagine like 1.2 billion people live under double-digit inflation. And if the inflation is like 550%, like in Venezuela, you're going to watch your entire family's fortune disappear. They are in the danger of losing their education, healthcare, food. You stop worrying about what is illegal and legal, right? And you start caring about what is just and unjust. It'll of course start forcing people to transact in Bitcoin. Moreover, like Bitcoin's price increase has, you know, forced authorities who had once like completely banned Bitcoin to start mining Bitcoin instead. I mean, we saw this happen in Iran, Pakistan, Venezuela. I mean, the genius of Bitcoin is to take advantage of its economic incentives, force the governments to get involved and help run the system instead of just attacking it.
And yeah, at the end of the day, the only way to kill Bitcoin maybe is to make it so that people don't need it anymore. Like if no one wants an open, censorship resistant, seizure resistant, permissionless, borderless, peer-to-peer, decentralized, inflation-proof financial asset, then no one will feed energy to it and Bitcoin will die a natural death. Perhaps mankind can even come up with a better monetary technology, but until then, I think Bitcoin will survive. And as for governments, just like El Salvador, the only winning move is to play. Hey, if you've made it this far, thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed the conversation, be sure to subscribe to the show. You can also send us your feedback to hello@bitcoininfinitypodcast.com or visit our website, bitcoininfinitypodcast.com. We're also on Twitter at Bitcoin8Podcast. That is BITCOIN number 8 podcast. As always, this show is meant for educational purposes only and is not financial advice.